This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over, isn't it romantic? Ooh. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss?
Yes, I am.
Good, because I got one for you. Mwah, mwah,
mwah, mwah. Ooh, that's more than one, but I'll take them all.
I know. Well, you just spread them out over the next three episodes. Take one for now and put the other two in your pocket.
Aw, thank you. Well, I'm back to you.
Put those extra. I'm catching them. I'm catching them in the sky. Yes.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one September to Remember movie, Isn't It Romantic? And I am here with my lovely co-host, the one who I can't wait to take a bite out of the Big Apple with, Miss Tamara Cosio.
And I'm here with the slow motion to my running, ooh, the meat to my cute, aww, the Whitney to my Natalie, my co-host, Corinne Edding.
The what to your Natalie?
Whitney, oh, she was her friend in the show. The Whitney to my Matt Natalie. I know it's not well known, but after this episode, you will for sure know both of them. I think it needs to be said again that we're doing September to Remember because we are both going on the girls' bestie trip of a lifetime to New York, the Big Apple, and all the movies that we are doing this month are taking place in New York, the Big Apple, and Isn't It Romantic is no exception.
Yay! And there are so many hot people in this movie.
Oh, the fucking balls there is. Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
So how you doing, Miss Tamara?
It's been hot. Been real hot. Been real fucking hot. Hot and humid. LA's melting. Fires. The end of the earth. It's been miserable over here. How about you?
Well, you know, I would be miserable if I didn't have my air conditioner.
Oh, hateful. Hateful. And you have to tell the people, because you told me before we started recording, and I just wanted to reach through the phone and congratulate you emphatically. But how did you get that air conditioner?
So my next door neighbor, she texted me and she was like, hey, so do you want an air conditioner? And to preface this, last Friday I was walking back home after work and I saw a new air conditioner near where all the deliveries are. And I noticed it was for my neighbor. And I was like, and I thought about sending her a text message being like, hey, so I'm going to be coming over. But I thought that was creepy. So I didn't do it. I practiced restraint, didn't do it. And so then she texted me later if I wanted an air conditioner. And I was like, well, I know it's not the one that I just saw downstairs. And she was like, my husband decided to replace the perfectly good working air conditioner that we already have with a new one. Twitch, twitch, twitch. And I was like, I understand. And also, yes, please.
Oh, and you are benefiting from that bad decision.
I got a serendipitous air conditioner right when there's a heat wave hitting the area.
Yes. And it's been so hot over here, my roommate's boyfriend bought him an air conditioner for his birthday, and it cost all of $300. And I was like, fuck that. Would love to buy myself an air conditioner, but also need the funds to go to New York.
Yeah, but New York won't make you sleep better.
Aw, well, thanks. Thanks for pointing that out. Maybe it will. Maybe I'll have sweet dreams about all of our adventures. Who knows?
Gentle listeners, I must admit, I feel a little guilty because the amount that I'm going to be using an air conditioner where I live is like very small amount. My need for an air conditioner is I actually wouldn't spend money on one because it gets really hot about maybe a total of 3 weeks out of the year. But most of the time I'm like wearing a hoodie all of the time. So like during the middle of the summer, I'm wearing a hoodie because it just doesn't get hot. So,
well, you're just going to see next time I come visit you, I'm going to be leaving and there's going to be an air conditioner sized bulge in my suitcase when I walk out your door.
That's good. You're going to ride it like a vehicle back down to LA.
I will. If it gets home and that's the only way I can do it, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah.
So I had a beautiful serendipitous moment and I am here for it. And I feel guilty that it wasn't Tamara that got the air conditioner instead.
Well, I could. Like, the guy in my life, he has an extra air conditioner, but it's one of those ones that sits in your window.
Uh-huh.
And since I'm on the second floor and my window is directly above my downstairs neighbor's backyard.
Yeah.
Like, it drips water.
Oh, yeah.
And I've had, like, yeah, I don't think that they would be too happy with that, with a bunch of water dripping down into their yard.
No. Your downstairs neighbors aren't the most gracious of folks.
No, no. When I cleaned my patio and water dripped down, they complained to the manager, so I know better than to do that. God forbid.
How dare you?
I know.
It'd be one thing if you were treating it like the fucking log ride, you know, or Niagara Falls and having water go down it all the time. It's another thing, like, as a one-off, having some water drip onto their patio area. Ugh.
I totally felt bad because I was like, I thought you weren't home. I did it during a part of the day that I swear you guys would be gone. What are you doing there? Watching you get my backyard wet. Oh, shit.
Oh, no, not that. What do they do when it rains? That's what I want to know. Do they complain to the manager then?
It never rains. No, it never rains in Southern California. As the song says, it never rains in Southern California. And they tell me. But I didn't feel too terribly bad because that motherfucker downstairs has a motorcycle, a very nice motorcycle. But there's been times on the weekend mornings pretty early that he likes turning it on and repairing it. No. And I'm like, in his backyard, right under my window.
No, no, no. No, no, no.
Mm-hmm.
This is getting the double birds. Yep,
nope. Corinne is flipping the double bird, and rightly so, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, and I'm like, do I complain to the manager about this, bitch? Do I? Well, I'm going to start after you complained about me. Then I just don't want to have a neighbor war.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's how it starts.
Yeah. I understand. So, Miss Tamara, are you better than me? And did you actually create a synopsis for this movie?
No. Nope, I am going to bypass it and edit it in. While I'm going to write it while you're saying your segments and put it in very robotically.
Somebody
is a bad edit job.
Somebody who's really smart and amazing did that once during the podcast.
Well, that person's not me because I do have a synopsis. Synopsis. Natalie, played by Rebel Wilson, is an unappreciated architect that keeps getting taken advantage by coworkers and life in general, until one day she gets bonked on the head and suddenly, and much to her dismay, is living in a rom-com movie. The only familiar thing in her new world is her bestie Josh, played by Adam Devine, or Devine.
I don't know.
Divine Devine. Adam Devine. Whoever the fuck he is, he's adorable. Even though she's getting hit on left and right by handsome men, mostly Blake, played by the very handsome Liam Hemsworth, Natalie's feelings for Josh grow. Will Natalie find hot, sexy love with the handsome Blake? Or will she ease into the comfortable bath of a relationship that's been warming up with Josh? And most importantly, will she get the fuck out of the rom-com nightmare world? Find out with us as we ponder, beep, isn't it romantic?
Beep, beep.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Crin. Let's try that again. And more importantly, will she get the
beep, beep, beep
out of this rom-com nightmare world? You'll understand that later in the story, I'm sure. Corinne, are you ready to start us on Isn't It Romantic?
Oh, so while you're talking, I'm going to write up my portion of the script. Don't worry, I got it all covered. We're just going to edit it back in.
No. So you should have wrote your first part as I was giving you the synopsis. So go right ahead. Go right in. Jump right in. Yeah. We're going to be paying absolutely no attention to each other this whole episode. It'll be glorious. Probably our best one yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you talking?
Oh, fuck you. Beep, beep, beep.
Doom, 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 doom. Pretty woman walking down the street. You hear Roy Orbison's Pretty Woman play as a 12-year-old Natalie, Australian, young, chubby, with frizzy blonde hair, sits watching Richard Gere talking to Julia Roberts in a bathtub. It's prime 90s viewing and the romantic dream I grew up watching. You too can be a sex worker, have a rich guy hire you, and then fall in love. Her mom, a world-weary woman, pours herself a giant Hefeweizen glass of box wine and discourages her from any hope of romantic love. Natalie.
Hold on a second.
Yes?
I saw that in your outline.
Uh-huh.
Did you see what dear old mom put in her glass before the big-ass trollop of wine?
No.
Vanilla ice cream. She made herself a fucking wine float.
Oh! Wow.
Oh, my God. The look on your face was priceless, which is why I had to interrupt you. Did you see that? No, she put like a big old glop of vanilla ice cream and then she poured boxed wine on top of it. I don't know. Maybe it's an Australian delicacy. We don't know. We don't want to judge.
I don't know. I don't like wine. I think it tastes like rotten grapes. But Tamara, you have a more refined palate than me. Would you like to have a wine float?
Yeah. No. No, I wouldn't. Thanks for asking, though. I think that's more like beep, beep. No.
Natalie still thinks she'll get her happily ever after, but now has doubts. Thanks, Mom. 25 years later, Natalie is living in New York City in a crappy tiny studio apartment with her scrappy looking poodle, Baxter, who doesn't listen to her. Natalie's across the hall neighbor, Donnie, is dismissive of her when she gives him a love note that was left on her door for him. As she's leaving for work at her architect job, a falafel cart comes rolling down the hill. The vendor, running after the cart, yells, "Stop the cart! Stop the cart!" Natalie looks at him puzzled. "Me?" she says, as the falafel cart barrels towards her at top speed. The vendor demands, "Yes, you, stop it with your body." Just then the cart slams into her. Natalie effectively stops the cart and is toppled onto the ground. Instead of being appreciative, the vendor exclaims, "Wow, you're built like a cement truck." Natalie gives him a thumb up from the ground. "Thank you. That's what all the guys say." I'm sensing a theme. Natalie is treated dismissively.
I think she should have at least got a fucking falafel or a shish kebab for that, for stopping his goddamn cart. Not a, like, backhanded compliment.
That wasn't even a back... like, yeah. Yeah, no. I think she gets, like, falafel from life for that cart. Like, come on.
Yes. Something.
Seriously.
Yes. A hero.
Just, yes. I want...
A hero for the hero.
Hey! Yes! I'm sensing a theme. Natalie is treated dismissively and like shit. But surely this won't continue once she gets to work and she's in her high-power architect zone. The next section I have called Natalie Doesn't Shine at Work. Natalie makes her way through bustling city streets, and when she gets to work, she's treated as the errand girl instead of an architect. A coworker shoves some trash into her hands, asking her to take care of it, and the office manager asks her to call a tech because the printer isn't working. Fortunately, her assistant Whitney and her work bestie Josh are firmly in her corner. Josh gives her a pep talk and pushes her into a meeting where the haughty client, Liam Hemsworth, hello, honey, who is 6'3", in an impeccably fitted suit, muscular, blonde, and bearded. And did I mention a total smoke show? Yes.
I just love how everything gets your cursory description. And this happened, and then Liam Hemsworth, he was wearing a blue suit, which matched his blazing blue eyes, and he had a little scruff. And just like get really deep into the man loving descriptions.
I didn't realize he had...
And I'm appreciating that.
Blazing blue eyes. That. Thank you for that.
I didn't either. He might not. I was just throwing it out there. They might be green. I don't know.
Or they might be blazing brown eyes. Who knows?
I'm looking it up on IMDb now, damn it. Liam Hemsworth. Oh, no, they're blue. Hello. Hello. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Okay, continue.
I think that Tamara got a little enraptured by Liam Hemsworth's eyes.
You're going to be doing your parts while I'm reading my parts, and I'm going to be staring at Liam Hemsworth when you're doing your parts.
That's what I needed, to bring a little Liam Hemsworth puppet with me so you would pay attention over here. Over here! Over here! Look!
No, you don't want to do that, because next time I come visit you, I'll be leaving your apartment with a Liam Hemsworth puppet-shaped suitcase.
The client, the smoke show that is Liam Hemsworth, looks at her, takes her coffee from her hand, says, "Thanks, hon," and slurps the drink and remarks with disgust, "Ugh, I hate whipped cream in my coffee. Give me a regular coffee." Natalie timidly states, "Ah, you see, I'm not an assistant." And her boss gives her the evil eye. She mumbles, "But I'm a team player. I'll just get that coffee." And she leaves the meeting room, defeated.
Out into the beautiful day. She's in a park. People are playing music and working out, and she's getting coffee. But her bestie Josh is tagged along. By a fountain, an attractive young girl drops her sunglasses, and a guy rushes over to give them back to her. They lock eyes. There are hearts forming. And Natalie plows between them and bitches to her bestie that hot guys just don't notice her. "You know, a nice guy with a nice life." Josh raises his eyebrows. "I'm a nice guy. I see you. I have a nice life. As a matter of fact, I drive a hybrid." Natalie specifies, "No, a really hot, hunky, rich guy." Josh's feelings have been stomped on, but she doesn't notice. And he argues, "If a guy actually liked you, you wouldn't even notice." "Hello, is it Josh you're looking for?"
Nice.
"Like that couple back there. They were about to have a moment, and you plowed through them like a linebacker." She tells him to stop being an idiot, slaps him playfully on the chest, and notices that his pecs are rather hard. "You've been working out?" she asks. "Yep, he got one of those ab blasters." "Hot." Back at the office, Natalie notices Josh staring off out the window. She follows his gaze, and he's staring at a billboard of a beautiful woman in a swimsuit. It's Priyanka Chopra. She rolls her eyes and asks Whitney for something, but Whitney's knee-deep in a rom-com. She's watching Wedding Singer and just needs 43 more minutes until the movie's over to find out what happens. Natalie reluctantly has to shut that shit down. "How about you stop watching full-length movies and act as my assistant and assist me?"
Ooh.
Besides, she argues, all of those movies are the same. Trying on clothes and turns into a stupid montage. "Trying on clothes is fun," Whitney argues, and Nat gives her a look. All big girls give their cute, cute little petite things when they say something that naive, like trying on clothes is fun, because honestly, it's a little bit torturous. I don't know if you feel the same, Corinne. Am I speaking out of turn here?
I don't mind trying on clothes. I do mind trying on pants, though.
That would be clothes. That would be
no,
clothes.
But like dresses, shirts, you know, anything like that. I don't. But I'm more like proportionately typical on the top half of my body, and the lower half of my body is the more difficult part of me to fit, because my badonkadonk, it keeps on badonking.
Your badonk keeps to donking.
Yes, that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. I totally feel that too, because I finally think I've mastered the secret of me getting clothes on top, because I have the shoulders of a linebacker and really big tatas, is to get like double extra large shirts, even though theoretically I could buy an extra large. Like, I just always get double extra large, because then when they shrink, they still are decent. And they kind of billow around my problem areas instead of like hugging them real, real tight, because these boobies take up a lot of room. Anyways.
You look really good in like flowy clothes, I have to say. You you channel that whole like boho chic look with perfection.
I haven't bought flowy I'm lying. I have. Yeah. Thank you, though. So in the next portion, I wrote, anywho, I have to quote this next part because it was too funny. Corinne put in her notes, and then Natalie goes on a Corinne-style tirade about rom-com tropes for about 3 hours.
Well, it's kind of true. It's totally something I would do.
And not only are we we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about this at length for a while.
I have thought about it a lot, and you can read my paper. I actually wrote a paper about romances and their cultural effect on people. So you can read my paper on it.
Oh, my God. And Natalie does go on a Corinne-style tirade. She talks about how clumsy girls aren't charming. She says this at the desk, and then it cuts to the two of them in the break room, where Natalie waxes poetic about how women cannot be friends in the workplace. Then it cuts to them making copies, and she goes on, where the fuck is HR in the rom-com world? There's no diversity, and everyone is boning everyone else. And, back at the desk, what about the cliche best friend? What the fuck is his deal? And in every single movie, it ends with a running in slow-mo scene. Guess what, honey? Natalie ends. If he wanted to be with you, he would be. Just then, Josh pops his head in and overhears the diatribe. Whitney explains that Nat hates love and wants to shit on all the happiness romantic comedies bring. Josh is appalled because he's a fan of those juicy little sparks of delight. In fact, he admits, I put Notting Hill and 13 Going on 30 in my high school time capsule. Whitney high-fives him because fuck yeah! And he subtly asks Natalie out to go karaokeing. She would prefer to do something less embarrassing, like trampolining naked. And Josh mumbles, you could have just said no, and shows himself out. Whitney wheels over to her bestie and says, there's one more thing that romantic comedies have taught me. You're friend-zoning Josh. Natalie pshaws hard. Josh doesn't like her. Like that. He's constantly staring out the window at Miss Hottie McHotterson that's on the billboard. Whitney says if Natalie were more open, people would see her more. But then she realizes she's overstepped her boundaries, mouths, I love you, sorry, and rolls away. Aww. I know you have feelings about Notting Hill because I like Notting Hill, and you're like, Notting Hill's awesome! I mean, awful, not awesome. You definitely don't think it's awesome.
I know Notting Hill, I just don't quite remember it, but I think Julia Roberts is horrible in that movie. Not like horrible as in a horrible yes. actress, but just a horrible human being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I believe that's what you said to me when I was like, I love Notting Hill. You're like, Julia Roberts is a horrible human being in that movie. I think that was quote near what you said, unquote.
Yeah. Well, I love the when Whitney like says what she does and then she realizes she's overstepped and she's like, whoop. I'm sorry. And like rolls away. And I'm like, oh, I feel like that's my life. Me being like, oh, ooh, what? Did went too far. Back it up.
Back away.
Back away from that statement. On the subway ride home, Natalie glances out the window and the train that's running parallel to them has a guy who's pointing at her, gesturing. Hey, you want a drink? She looks around and he's definitely gesturing at her. Natalie glances at her phone right when Whitney sends her a gif that says, be open, while hot dogs are being thrown at a person's face. And I have to pause things for a moment here. I was getting worried about Tamara. We had several movies in a row with nary a hot dog. And finally, hot dogs!
I was about to turn it off until that scene. I was like, fuck this shit. I haven't had a hot dog in 3 to 4 movies. I don't know what Corinne's doing. Like, she's picking these on purpose.
I know. I'm sorry, Tam. I knew Tam was going through withdrawals, so this should help tide her over. Although, I do very much wonder about that gif where it says, be open, and then it shows this person with their mouth open and hot dogs, like full hot dogs being just pelted at them. It's like a barrage of hot dogs. It's not like, oh, it's just a few. It's like there's like 10 hot dogs just coming at this person and just hitting them all over the face. And I was like, what is that?
Very weenie heavy, yes. Mm-hmm.
Anywho, the trains stop across the platform from each other, and cute guy and Natalie get off their respective trains. He walks towards her and starts chatting her up. Then suddenly, he punches her in the stomach and grabs her purse. But while Natalie may be a pushover in all other aspects of her life, in this instance, she decides to take no shit. They tussle, each person taking turns grabbing the purse. Natalie is lying on the ground with a firm hold on it when he appeals to her. I'm sorry, I have 3 kids to feed. Haven't you ever struggled? Natalie relinquishes the purse until, He immediately looms over her. Ha ha, sucker. I don't even have any kids. Natalie has had enough. She punches the guy in the balls, grabs her purse, blindly running forward and away from him, but she quickly thunks into a large metal support, knocking herself out. Natalie wakes up in the hospital, but instead of looking like a hot mess, she has a full face of makeup and her hair is done. Her super hunky doctor, who is played by the very magnetic Tom Ellis, who is the star of the TV show Lucifer, lets her know.
Wow.
yes, that she's in the emergency room, which, instead of looking like an emergency room, is a private room with gauzy curtains softly blowing in the breeze. He checks her eyes with the little flashlight and steps back. Oh, dear. He looks at her intensely. Your eyes are quite beautiful. Natalie freaks out. Did I die? She springs up wearing the best-fitting hospital smock ever to leave. Mm-hmm. You're working with that subway guy. Are you trying to steal my kidneys? The doctor chuckles. Oh, you're so cute. You can totally leave, but your clothes were ruined. Don't worry, gentle listeners, though. They picked her up some clothes from the lost and found.
Natalie leaves the hospital wearing some rich lady politician dress, gloves, and a big floppy hat. Or is it a nod to Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman? Question
mark. You are right. I am wrong. Oh, my gosh.
I think we're both right.
You're amazing. Ugh. Thank you for that. Oh,
no, I know. I looked at that and I was like, what in the actual fuck is she wearing? And then I'm like, oh, after I watched the second go round, I'm like, that dress looks suspiciously like the one Julia Roberts was wearing in Pretty Woman.
Well, and it explains the hat, too, because I'm like, why did they give her a big floppy hat to wear? It makes no sense. They should have her with her beautiful blonde locks just kind of, you know, flowing around her. But Julia Roberts, yes. Oh, it all makes so much sense now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You light up my life.
That makes sense, but the gloves and the clutch that she has that's about the size of a trapper keeper really don't.
I think she might have been wearing gloves in Pretty Woman. The trapper keeper clutch is really special.
Very special. She could probably take somebody out with that if they tried to mug her again. Natalie calls Josh and asks him to please call her. She was mugged. Perhaps somebody's trying to harvest her for her eggs. She doesn't know. Every guy that passes by her on the street greets her. And the falafel vendor is now a cupcake vendor and compliments her on her stylish politician garb. She takes it all in with a what the fuck expression on her face. Then a passing cyclist turns up his boombox and we hear, making my way downtown. Walking fast, face is passing, I'm homebound. Are we going to have a fun, boppy walking scene? Yes, but no. Natalie steps out onto the street and immediately gets hit by a limo. Not hard. Or maybe it was hard and she just really is built solid like the falafel cart man said. A handsome young man emerges from the limo sunroof and it's Blake from the morning meeting. Except now he's being super friendly and has an Australian accent. Good call, Blake. Australian would be my accent of choice. Unless it was perhaps British. She tries to explain that they met that morning when he stole her cup of whipped cream with a splash of coffee in it, and he can't imagine he'd forget meeting her. New improved Blake thinks she hit her head and offers her a ride home. She gets in the limo, and the ride takes across the fucking... She probably went from, like, Manhattan to...
Queens.
Long Island. Oh, she goes from Manhattan to Queens?
Well, yeah, I know she lives in Queens, so...
Okay, we'll say that. We'll say yes. Sure. So she goes from Manhattan to Queens, and the ride takes all of 18 seconds. And her neighborhood is not the way she left it. It's clean, it's quaint, and there are fucking flowers everywhere. She marvels at it all, and then immediately starts sneezing from the pollen overload. Blake triple blesses her sneezing and offers her a hanky or a tissue. She declines and says she just needs to lay down. But before she leaves, he grabs a rose from a local vendor, writes his phone number, one number on each individual petal and scatters them into her hat, telling her to call me if you need anything. She looks at the jumble and says, you do know that there's 3.6 million different permutations on how that could go. But he's confident and counters that, but there's only one of you. He gets back in the limo, pops up from the sunroof and asks, do you feel what I'm feeling? No! She screams back. So he pantomimes, call me, and is off. She tries calling Josh once again. When she's inside her building, she distractedly puts her keys in the keyhole, but it's not there. Her apartment door is way at the end of the hallway, but it's not her apartment, even though the numbers match. She tries the key and it works. On the other side is an apartment decorated in teal and white, which kind of resembles a Barbie dream home.
Also a Tiffany box.
Oh, good, yes. A Tiffany box with the Barbie flourish in it.
Yes.
Because it's got like a huge painting of a fluffy white dog. And anyways,
Tiffany
we'll
meets
into it.
Barbie. Tiffany the jeweler's meets Barbie. Yeah.
Yeah. Barbie and her bestie Tiffany. Go to New York. That should be the theme for our trip. Okay, maybe not.
I'm like, I'm Tiffany.
You looked very worried when I said that. I don't want to be Barbie. I want to be Tiffany.
Okay, we're both Phoebe. We're both Phoebe.
Okay. She apologizes, slams the door of the apartment behind her, but realizes if it wasn't her apartment, why did her key work? She goes in and announces, whatever reality show this is, you did a great job. I will love it, not list it. But then Baxter, her dog, runs out. And he is perfectly coiffed. She can't take it anymore and calls 911. But upon explaining that somebody stretched her apartment, replaced all her crappy stuff with much nicer stuff, and her closet is full of every shoe she's ever imagined in her size, the operator tells her that that's not an emergency and promptly hangs up. And I believe that's Michelle Boutreau.
It is Michelle Boutreau. I love her.
Just in time for Natalie to open her bathroom door and shriek at the top of her lungs because they're shaving his legs in her bathtub is her neighbor Donnie. She asks why he's there and he jokingly replies because somebody said gay Beetlejuice 3 times and poof, I appeared. Super bro-y Donnie is gay. Why, Natalie asks, are you talking in that super offensive gay voice? But Donnie doesn't know whatever she means. His phone buzzes and he encourages her to hurry up and change so they can go to your big presentation. What presentation, she asks, but Donnie has no fucking idea. He's there to move the plot line along and give her a ride. And what is the favored mode of transportation for the stereotypical gay bestie, Corinne? Can you tell us?
It's like a Vespa, a moped. And what does one listen to while riding the Vespa moped to work? Making my way downtown, walking fast, faces passing, I'm homebound. Ding, ding, ding. Yes, Vanessa Carlton's 1,000 Miles starts playing again.
Again.
As Natalie rides to work on the back of Donnie's Vespa. When she gets to work, we find that Natalie is wearing some kind of traffic light yellow meshish top and a sparkly fancy skirt. People are nice to her, except Whitney, her assistant, who seems to have grown several inches, now has a severe middle part, and I never thought I'd be saying this, aggressive eyelashes. Whitney went from looking like a slightly red-haired Cinderella pre-makeover to a full-on red-headed Disney villain in stilettos. The office is gone from cramped and cluttered to bright, airy, and modern. Josh approaches her and he seems normal. She expresses deep. I wrote she expresses deep freakout to him.
Sounds accurate. Yeah.
She expresses that she's really freaking out about this parallel universe she's living in. Josh suggests that they go out for some fresh air, and we next see them in Central Park, while couples all around them are so happy and so in love. Natalie more fully fills Josh in on what's going on. He doesn't understand it, but believes her because he trusts Natalie. Suddenly, a woman is choking nearby. Josh runs over and gives her a version of the Heimlich maneuver that looks like he's humping her ass. She's very thankful for his help.
The sexiest scene we're going to get in this whole
movie. I was like, oh, what's going on there? It's like, hip thrust, hip thrust, hip thrust. I was like, Priyanka was getting it. Ooh. She's very thankful with its help and turns around, her hair flowing slow motion style. And it's that model that was outside of Natalie's window at work. Priyanka Chopra, a.k.a. Isabella, a.k.a. the very badass star of Quantico. Oh, she is so good in that TV show. And she is so hot. And I'm just like, I love you. Oh, such a big girl crush on Priyanka Chopra. Jonas.
Isn't she with a Jonas brother?
She's married to a Jonas brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isabella is totally vibing Josh. She tells Josh that, "I like ordinary guys." And Josh responds with hearts in his eyes, "You can't get more ordinary than me." Isabella asks him out, lets him know she's a yoga ambassador, swimsuit model.
The fuck?
And she's a role model. Yoga ambassador? You know, an ambassador for yoga. Namaste, okay?
Oh, sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay.
She will teach you how to downward dog. She will teach you how to child's pose. She will revitalize your life by ambassadoring for the yogas.
What is the difference between an ambassador and an instructor in the yoga world? I'm curious.
She's like a spokesperson representative. She doesn't...
So are most instructors. You can't usually get them to stop talking about yoga. And its benefits.
She stands next to the instructor and is like, "You will be so grateful you are here in the yoga world doing the yoga things in yoga land."
Oh, okay. I'll totally make sense now. Thank you for clearing that up.
And then she hits a little gong. Gong.
And then we hear, "Making my way downtown, watching."
Homebound. Bing, 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 bing. So she's a role model as she gives back to the underprivileged. And Natalie, who's watching the entire scene unfold a few feet away, is jealous. And she's also ditched because Josh and Isabella leave her and go off for drinks. I kind of don't blame Josh, though. If I had, like, Priyanka Chopra being like, "Oh, I think you're so hot. Oh, I really like you." I'd be like, "I'm sorry, Tam. I'll get back to you later. I'll take you out for a really nice meal."
I'm almost hitting my microphone with my head because I'm nodding so emphatically. Yeah. I ditch your ass too, girl.
Yeah. and if she was doing that for you, I'd be like, "Go, go. Do it, do it."
You'd be like pushing me with your foot. "Get the fuck out of here.
Just make sure to take some selfies."
But lovingly.
Clothed. Not naked. Clothed. So I can see the two of you together.
Why do you think I take selfies naked?
Because I realized the way I said it was like, "Go off and do your thing with her and take some selfies." And I was like, this kind of sounds like I'm asking you to be like, "Here's my sexy photos." And I'm like, "No, I don't mean it in a sexy voyeuristic way. I mean it in a just like cute pictures of face kind of way."
I didn't take it that way, so maybe you did deep down think of it as a sexy voyeuristic way, and that's why you had to correct yourself. I see where your head's going.
Look, I can't help it. I'm a dirty, dirty girl with a dirty, dirty mind, and I'm trying to do better, therefore I'm going to follow Isabella's example and become a yoga ambassador.
Oh, sweet baby Jesus. Where's my little gong to... Natalie, being ditched, goes off in the opposite direction, and oopsies, she stumbles right into the arms of a handsome stranger. Oh, she's so clumsy. How charming. The handsome stranger looks into her eyes and says, "You're adorable." She screams and runs the other way. As she walks, she breaks it down for herself. "You've got a great apartment, a cute dog, a great job." And she stumbles again. "I'm so clumsy, and I'm talking out loud to myself." Oh, beep. She stops in the middle of the park courtyard and says, "I'm in a beep, beep romantic comedy." A truck backing up above her keeps bleeping out her curse words. So she tries it again. "My life has become a beep, beep, beep romantic comedy. What did I do to deserve this?" Suddenly, the people crowded around the square break into a choreographed dance routine behind her, and she looks on with disgust. And it's fucking PG-13. Of course, all we hear is, "And it's beep PG-13. Those are the worst ones because there's no sexy time. She races back to the subway. Perhaps if she can get mugged again, she'll be magically transported back to her normal life.
Good idea.
She finds a security guard and begs her to see the security footage from last night so she can find her mugger and they could relive the magic moment that transported her to this fucking rom-com land. The security guard is little help. She thinks Natalie is batshit crazy and tells her to go away. So, Out of desperation, Natalie jumps the turnstile and runs down to the platform. If she can't get the OG mugger to knock her out, maybe she can solicit the help of somebody new. She runs from guy to guy, begging them, mug me, mug me, mug me. And they all look at her about as crazy as a security guard from upstairs. She needs to take matters into her own hands. She sees the subway coming closer and decides, I'm just going to stand in front of it. That will knock me out and whisk me back to my mediocre, boring life. She takes a few tentative steps, closes her eyes, and tries to step in front of the train, and is yanked back into the arms of a policeman. His name tag says Officer Handsome. She looks deeply into his eyes and informs him that she doesn't want to be saved. And he just shrugs. Great, because I'm arresting you for jumping the turnstile. He cuffs her and hauls her away to the police station, parks her in front of a payphone, and tells her that she has one call. She asks him for her cell phone because she doesn't know anybody's number, but she can't have it. Who the fuck, she argues, knows phone numbers anymore? The officer looks at her unmoved. Pretend like it's 1995, he says. She looks at the number pad and informs him sarcastically that she can either call her dead Nana or her house that she lived at when she was 12. But then the memory strikes her. She has Blake's number on those rose petals. She fishes them out of her pocket, looks at Officer Handsome a little apologetically, and says, this probably won't work unless you believe in the power of love or some crap. She kisses the petals, throws them up in the air, and they land perfectly on the floor. 212-555-0129. The officer looks down at her, nods with a huh, like that was supposed to happen. She dials the number Blake picks up, and she mutters, this is so fucking stupid, into the receiver. I love how she's just disgusted by the whole, like, sweet rom-com senselessness of it all. Next, we see him bailing her out of jail. Blake notices that she looks troubled and asks if she'd like to talk about it. He has really big ear holes that are good for listening. She doesn't want to say because he'll think she's crazy, but he's relentless. So she tells him that she hit her head and got transported to the stupid rom-com land, which would be fine, but everybody keeps treating her like she's special, and she's not. He's got a glazed look in his eyes and says, there's just so much more I want to know about you. She's about to argue the point, but Blake's father calls, and he walks away to take it. Once he's gone, she shouts into the heavens, how can I just fast forward till the end? And her own voice from above answers, I started to wonder, a voiceover says, if there's another way out. Then it hit her. She's got to get somebody to fall in love with her.
Yeah.
She sees Blake pirouetting on the phone. She shrugs. Well, if I got to do it, a billionaire handsome guy with an accent's not a bad way to go. He returns and asks if he could take her out to dinner that night, and she agrees. He says, great, I'll send a car around to fetch you, and drives off. But she has questions. What time are you picking me up? What should I wear? Where are we going? I like to look at the menu ahead of time so I can plan what I'm going to eat. But he doesn't answer, just goes off into the night while blowing her kisses from the sunroof. She goes upstairs and gazes at all the clothes in her closet. What the hell she's supposed to wear? She calls her gay bestie Donnie, who magically, poof, appears next to her. She explains that she needs an outfit to go out with Blake and make him fall in love with her. And Donnie shrieks with delight because this is what he's been training for. His whole purpose is for this moment. He squeals, let's try on clothes. But she shuts that shit down. No, no, no clothes, no trying on, no montage, no.
Natalie is picked up in a limo and is wearing a smoking hot red strapless dress. She meets Blake. Oh, I just have to say, I love that they put that trope in where the person's like, hey, you want to go out? And they're like, yeah. And they're like, okay, see you later. And they walk off and you're like, where? Where am I going? What am I doing? Who?
Are you coming to pick me up, or are we meeting there, or are you going to call me, or
what time should I be ready, and what should I be wearing? Like Daisy Dukes and a crop top, or like an evening gown? I don't know.
The Daisy Dukes and crop top would be my first date outfit of choice.
Absolutely, yeah. I completely agree. That's one of my favorite outfits, just period. So.
I do have to say that Natalie's dress is smoking hot and makes her tatas look wonderful.
Oh, yeah. When I said she is wearing a smoking hot red strapless dress, I meant she's wearing a smoking hot. She looks smoking hot in that red strapless dress, I should rather say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She meets Blake by a yacht. They go for a ride on it and have deliciously prepared food. After their yacht ride, they break into a soda shop and have ice cream. And Blake has the most boring taste in ice cream. Butter pecan? What other flavors? Rum raisin. Have you ever had butter pecan or rum raisin ice cream?
I've had butter pecan, but I don't think I've ever had the want or need to eat rum raisin.
I've never had rum raisin. I think I've had butter pecan, but as I recall, it kind of just tasted like vanilla.
It's like vanilla and caramelly and a little salty, okay. If I remember correctly.
Okay.
It's almost like a salted caramel. I could be remembering completely incorrectly. If I am, please email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com.
We may have to do a little butter pecan and rum raisin taste test at some point in time.
No, let's not go that far. No, that's
Look, when we have our Patreon.
Maybe if we're in New York. Okay, yes. When we're in New York and we're in a nice little cute ice cream shop and they're like, do you want to try some samples? And we'll see how crazy they look at us if we say, yes, butter pecan and rum raisin, please.
Right now. Give me the tiny spoon.
Yeah.
So they avoid getting arrested, and as they're walking through empty New York City streets, she stumbles. He catches her perfectly dipping.
Why do they avoid getting arrested?
What?
Oh, they break into the ice cream. They break into the soda shop. I'm like, why do they always got to get it? Sorry. No.
I think that's a good point. So they broke into the ice cream shop. I didn't put this in, but there's some kind of siren and flashing lights that happen, and that's when they leave the ice cream shop so as not to get caught. So they avoid getting arrested, and as they're walking through empty New York City streets, she stumbles. He catches her, perfectly dipping her. It starts to rain, and he kisses her, and it's a fucking hot kiss. I was like, yes, yes, I'm wrapped up in the moment. This rom-com shit really works. Thank you, tropes. Thank you. They go back to her place, making out furiously in the hallway of the building. He's about to tell her he loves her when she shushes him. She thinks that once he says, I love you, that bloop, she'll get put into present day. So first, she wants to enjoy this man's sexy bod a bit before she gets blooped into reality. Do we blame her?
Amen to that.
Yeah, no.
No, not at all.
She at least wants to sleep with him before she goes back to present day. She rips open his shirt, buttons flying everywhere, and they make out even more passionately. And then we cut to, never seen you looking so lovely as you did tonight. Never seen you shine so bright. Ooh. Natalie's bedroom, but it's the next day, and Lady in Red is playing. Natalie sits up in a cute pair of light pink satin boy pajamas, confused. Blake comes out of the shower, a towel wrapped around his waist, and she's like, what the fuck? Because she's missed the entire nookie part. He states, good morning, beautiful. Last night was amazing. I think I love... Natalie interrupts him. Don't say a word. Just get back on in here. She pats next to herself on the bed. Blake amiably says, okay, throws off his towel and walks towards the bed. And we suddenly see her fancy curtains lightly blowing in the breeze. Never seen you looking so lovely as you did tonight. Never seen you shine so bright. Ooh. She tries to get it to happen. But as soon as anything might happen, it cuts to the next day, and never seen you looking so lovely as you did tonight. Never seen you shine so bright.
God damn you, PG-13 rating! Fuck you, PG-13!
Which reminds me, I saw a terrible, you know, Netflix has been doing some kind of Hallmark style romance movies, and some of them are successful, but then there's a slew of them that just don't have any of the charm of the Hallmark movies, but it's got the same like bad storylines of the Hallmark movies, right? And so this one actually had a quote sex scene in it. And so they have a meal together and they're like, ha, 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 ha. And maybe they do like a tiny little kiss and it's like, oh. And then they're like walking around looking at things, maybe holding hands, maybe not. And then suddenly you see them in a bedroom and like things are happening. And I'm all, wait, what? Huh? Huh? I'm all for a sex scene, but A, they're fully clothed. But B, it's heavily being innuendoed that they're having sex. But C, there was no heated makeup to that part. So it's just like, oh, we're friends walking down the street and never seen you look so lovely.
I wonder if those scenes got cut or if he like, ooh, whoopsie, stumbled and fell and accidentally stuck his dick inside of her. No, that happens on the occasion.
You know, I've been on some dates where I'm like, wait a minute, what? Suddenly a dick's inside of me. And I'm like, I did not want or expect this. Okay. Sure. Whatever.
Hate when that happens.
I hate it when that happens. So, yeah. Lady in Red comes on. Blake comes out of the bathroom professing his love, and Natalie gives up. She grabs a couple of things she likes so that when she goes back to her regular life, she'll have them. But when Blake says, I love you, nothing happens. No nook and no real life. Sigh. Natalie has had an eventful few days. She returns to work, and apparently she's been gone an entire week before the big presentation. Whitney plays the catty bitch part, and Natalie is still trying to be friends with her, insisting that they don't have to be enemies. But Whitney just flips her off.
Do you think that she was, like, gone for a week, like, realistically, and that's how rom-coms are? Like, they're just, like, living this whole life, and it just happens to be 2 days ago. Or do you think it's because she kept rewinding with Blake in that one scene that it's like, oh, it's Tuesday. Oh, now it's Wednesday. Oh, now it's Thursday. Oh, now it's Friday.
I think that's, yes. I think that's what happened. I think
these are the things I think about, yeah.
The genius of this movie, once again. No, because I was like, I only count 2 days. Like, you know, she shows up to work and then she immediately leaves. And then the next day she wakes up with Blake. And so there's that. And then it's like, okay. So, yes, I totally think you're right. Wow. You're a genius of this movie. Well, I already know you're a genius. I shouldn't even say you're a genius of this movie. You are a genius. Sorry for adding a whatever onto it.
I don't know if you know this, but I am an Isn't It Romantic ambassador. So I know the things about the movies, about the things about the movies. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem.
In their meeting, Natalie's boss man is so happy to see her. He asks her what her idea is for the big meeting, and she says softly, I only design parking garages. But boss man pish poshes her. You're our star architect. Come on. What are your plans? Whitney, who got her pointy shoulder padded suit jacket from the Evil Queen collection, says disdainfully, she's got nothing. Josh covers for her, saying, Natalie is saving the best for last. It's a surprise for the big presentation, and I applaud that. He starts clapping, and other people in the room join him.
Natalie needs that big project idea, so she goes home and draws, and draws, and draws, and draws. Day turns into night, night turns into day, and she's still drawing away, nonstop. She doesn't even get up to go to the bathroom. What the fuck? Well, into her project, there's a knock on the door. She yells, come in! And is surprised because Donnie usually just magically appears. But it's not her bestie Donnie. It's Josh. He's brought Chinese food because he knows she was working so hard she forgot to eat. She's thrilled because she did forget. She's starving, and she blurts out, I love you. He pauses for a beat as he puts the food on the counter and then comes over to see what she's working on. He proclaims that she's a genius and doesn't even need his help, so he kind of starts moving to leave. She a little frantically asks him to stay. She wants his company. And Josh rolls his eyes up in the back of his head because thank God he really wanted those soup dumplings. They race to the bag, elbowing each other out of the way, trying to get the best dumplings. As they pull him out, Josh realizes he just got off the subway, probably has a few viruses on his hands, and goes to wash them. While he's gone, Natalie voices over to herself, did I have it wrong? Am I supposed to have Josh fall in love with me? Am I supposed to forget Blake? Do I look cute in these side braids?
Yes, you do.
Which she does because she's wearing very cute side braids. Josh returns They eat the dumplings, and he has a total Meg Ryan fake foodgasm moment as he eats one, moans and writhes at the deliciousness of Mr. Wong's Chinese food, just as Blake comes through the door without knocking and announces, "I'll have what he's having."
Ugh.
I'm sure Natalie thinks what we all think. Boy, just because you've been inside of me doesn't mean you can just come inside my apartment mm-hmm. anytime you want, fucker.
Mm-hmm.
Josh is surprised and asks, "Oh, is he helping you out with the project too?" And Blake tells him, "Nah, I'm in love with this beguiling woman." He puts his arm around Natalie, and she keeps trying to shrink away from him and downplay their relationship. "We just started seeing each other," Natalie says, but Josh sees the writing on the wall and tells him he doesn't want to be a third wheel and leaves, much to her dismay.
In that outline, there's misspellings all throughout this outline. One of the big ones was, I said, faking organisms.
As long as it has ORG, makes sense. ORG stands for so many things, as we have outlined in our episode a few weeks back.
Yes. ORGAMSMS. Orgasms.
Except for that. I don't think we went over that. That one's a new one. Sorry. Say that. Spell that one more time for us, Corinne.
ORGAMSMS.
Orgasms.
Orgasms.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Those are the best kinds.
Those are totally the best kind. I haven't had one of those in a long time.
I've had an orgasm. I haven't had an orgasm.
Yeah.
Those are like top of the tier, top shelf. The next day, Blake and Natalie are walking down the street. She has the weirdest shirt on that has a graphic of sunglasses hanging from the shirt collar instead of actual sunglasses. I pointed this out to Corinne, saying I wasn't sure if I liked or hated this shirt, and then noticed that Corinne had a very similar graphic tank top, but much cuter because hers is totally graphic with glasses all over it.
Yeah.
And so I thought she might be offended that I said that. No. And I was like, that shirt was weird. And I'm like, oh, wait, look at your shirt. Oh, shit.
No,
because it's okay.
Not only was that the graphic of sunglasses hanging from the neck, but there was actually like a little divot in the neck of the shirt. So it looked like a little bit more dimensional. And I was just like, no. But see, this doesn't look like I'm trying to fake a pair of glasses, which her shirt did. My shirt just has super cute, my dress has super cute glasses just all over it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there will be a picture for our social meds.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And Tamara will do a artistic rendering of the sunglass shirt. She'll draw a sunglass and put it on one of her shirts and take a picture. So we'll see what she's talking about.
Is that right? No, I'm just going to be really lazy and put an actual pair of sunglasses and hang them off my shirt and be like, surprise, doesn't it look realistic? That's how good I am at my skills.
You are that good.
As they're walking, Blake is spewing more inspirational quotes because he has a tendency to do that throughout the movie. Have you heard of Gandhi? He says. I believe Gandhi said, when your thoughts, actions, and words all coincide, then you have achieved something.
Have you heard of Gandhi?
Yes. I was just like, ah, bullshit. And he says, like, when this all happens, you achieve something. And I was just like sitting there going, have I fucking heard of Gandhi? Seriously? Did you really say that? And so I completely missed the end of the quote, and I didn't feel like going back and rewinding it. So he says something about Gandhi.
I never really heard who he was referring to when he said the quote. And so I just heard the quote, yeah. And I didn't hear the have you heard of Gandhi part. So I'm like,
yes.
But thank goodness to our isn't it romantic ambassador, Tamara, I now know that he said, have you heard of Gandhi?
Gandhi.
And I was like,
have you, Corinne, though? Have you heard of Gandhi?
I'm like, and Tamara, have you heard of Oprah?
No. Sounds familiar. She live in San Jose on our street?
She says, you get a car, and you get a car, and you get a car.
Oh, so inspirational. Yeah. Blake and Natalie go into a coffee shop, and once they enter, they see Josh and Isabella canoodling at a table.
Ooh.
They go over to make introductions, but it winds up that Isabella and Blake already know each other. They give the European mwah, mwah kiss on the cheeks, and Blake starts verbally jabbing at Josh. You didn't tell me, he says, that you were dating Natalie's assistant. He looks a little soft. Josh corrects that he's a project manager, and Isabella cries, I know, right? I call him Mush. Do that thing, she begs. And he tries to retract his head into his neck so that he has a quadruple chin. They laugh so funny, except Natalie. What the fuck? She realizes that Isabella and Blake are better suited and jokes, oh, maybe we should switch. You guys have such great chemistry. There's an awkward beat until Josh mumbles, oh, she's just kidding, to which everyone laughs and laughs. Then Isabella invites the two of them to her charming beach house for a little get-together that weekend. Blake's game, he was going to take his helicopter out anyways, and Isabella chuckles, that's so funny. I was going to invite you on my helicopter. But he's not having any of it. Natalie and I might want to hit the caperoo, so we'll take separate ones. He asks Natalie what she thinks, and she smiles at the ridiculous of it all and says, you had me at hell-o-copter.
Oh, zing. And now we're in the Hamptons at Isabella's party. Everyone is hanging out on the lush green lawn. Natalie and Blake are sitting at a table accompanied by a giant lobster, which Natalie observes is the size of a cat.
I just have to interrupt you. I'm so sorry.
Please?
But
yes,
they're sitting on the lawn.
Uh-huh.
They're eating their food.
Yeah.
And as the camera pans towards them, it goes past this huge mountain of food that says Raw Bar and Sashimi City. And I'm like, they basically have a bunch of raw seafood out there in the open, not on ice, in the heat of the Hamptons, just warming up and getting ready for people to consume.
Oh, you mean they're doing the very eco-green solar cooking? Is that what you're talking about? It's
well,
the wave
that would
of the future.
Go against raw bar and sashimi, but I mean, I don't know. I'm not from the Hamptons. Maybe that's how they do it. Maybe it starts off raw and sashimi, and then eventually it gets cooked. Maybe. I don't know.
All I know is that you're onto something, because I have had so many different like family and friends return from a outdoor family reunion picnic of some sort and be like, oh, I got so much food poisoning from that potato salad or some other thing. Upscale version, raw bar and sashimi.
Yeah. I was like, bad idea.
Well, Natalie's lobster is not raw, but I still think just even cooked seafood just chilling out there in the sunshine, not a great idea.
Nope.
And Blake can't help but call her beguiling. For the 59th
Again,
time.
With the beguiling.
Yes.
Beguiling. Ugh. I don't even like that word, beguiling.
But Tamara, you're so beguiling.
I hate you.
Well, not only is Tamara over it, but so is Natalie. She's so over it. So when he goes to talk on the phone to his dad, Natalie sees Josh and leaves their table and the lobster for a walk and talk with Josh. Josh is impressed that they're both with the world's most perfect people. The funny thing, Josh says, is I always thought I was going to be with you. Natalie is confused. Why didn't you ask me out then? Josh chuckles. I did. A ton of times, but you always turned me down. Natalie thought he was just asking her to do friend activities because what he was asking her to do was so casual and with other people. Hey, you want to get drinks after work? Hey, yeah. You want to like go hang out with my kickball team?
The Kickerbockers.
So I don't blame Natalie actually for not thinking that they were dates. But that's how you get to know someone, get drunk, and then make out with them so that then you can kind of bridge that gap, is all I'm saying.
Maybe he was kind of self-conscious about asking her out. And then maybe when they got there, he's going to be like, oh, shoot, nobody's here. Oh, well, guess it's just a date.
Oh, smooth. Nice.
Smooth. That's what I would do. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Isabella calls Josh mush over. And Josh bounds up to the balcony where she's waiting for him. Josh gives a toast explaining that he gave her the Heimlich and she gave him her heart. And surprise! Aww. We find out it's not just a party, it's their engagement party. They're getting married tomorrow. And tonight, there's...
The fuck?
Uh-huh. Karaoke.
It's been like a week.
Yeah. I'll say if you came up to me and you were like, I'm getting married, I'd be like, and then I might like bonk you over the head and kidnap you for a while. I don't mind if you get married, but I would be very blindsided if you were getting married. Like, you're like, yeah, just met this guy a month. Let's go. Bam. Merry time.
If you did the same thing to me, like, met this great guy, married. I'm like, I would just take you aside and be like, you remember what you said about taking me to Bora Bora with you guys on your honeymoon, right?
Because that's happening now. Right now.
Yeah. Sooner rather than later, I'm assuming. Because if you guys are getting married, then we're going, what, like next week? A couple of weeks? Like, you let me know so I can ask for time off.
Plus, you need to, like, get the hottest swimsuits to wear as well. I mean, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And I better be your fucking maid of honor. I better be your fucking maid of honor.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Why did you hesitate? Why the hell did you?
Because I was like.
Why the beep, or, beep did you hesitate?
I was like, or my sister.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, we went there.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Bridget.
Yeah. So, like, that's what I, like, I was like, there would be two people who would be that person for me. And it would be you or my sister. But she's dead.
In honor of your sister, Corinne, I will totally still be your maid of honor, but I will wear your sister's size K bra and stuff the bejeebus out of it so we have a little piece of her at the ceremony with us.
Can you imagine, like, particularly if your sister was there and she saw you standing up there next to me and you were like out to hear your boobs, she'd be like, what the fuck is going on?
Oh, I wouldn't tell her. I would totally lie and be like, boob job, I got mine's bigger than yours.
Oh my god, that'd be amazing. So Josh and Isabel are getting married tomorrow, and tonight there's karaoke. Like the karaoke that Natalie got invited to from Josh, and she said she'd rather do naked public jumping on a tambourine on a trampoline.
You know that famous pastime, jumping on a tambourine.
That's what fucking Tay Diggs does in Set It Up. He'd be like, this stupid tambourine! Throw it down on the ground. Ching, ching, ching! Jump on top of it.
Or Lars used that as an accompaniment for his Shania and yes. Serendipity. Tambourine of Pain! Oh my god, we're making all kinds of references to past episodes. So sorry if you didn't understand any of that for the last 30 seconds.
That's okay, though, because this is all part of our New York series, so you gotta catch them all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like references from Way Mystery episodes. These are all references from our September to Remember.
Except the Tambourine of Pain.
Triangle of Pain.
No, but it's the Tambourine of Pain. Ooh. Get it? We can totally just cut that part out because we need to get that in there for you.
Triangle of Pain! Ding, 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 ding.
Still makes me laugh!
Natalie is distressed about the entire situation and, ta-da! Conveniently, gay bestie Donnie shows up. Natalie is happy but surprised. How'd you get here, Donnie? Donnie explains, I just felt that you needed me, so I stole your password and found you with Find My iPhone, and then took a bus like a peasant here. Can you believe the woman next to me was eating spaghetti out of a Ziploc? Natalie tells Donnie that she's figured it out. It's Josh she's supposed to be with, not Blake. Donnie says, Kel Surprise, who would have thought your best friend who adores you and you... and who you have a ton of chemistry with would be the one for you. I mean, really, who could have seen that coming? Oh, wait a minute, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Natalie rolls her eyes. Sorry, I was just temporarily distracted by Blake's giant penis. Donnie does a spit take. You've seen his penis? I thought you weren't able to have sex. Natalie says, yeah, but that doesn't mean I didn't sneak a peek every once in a while. Oh, he's taking a shower. Mental picture, mental picture. Oh, going to the bathroom. Mental picture, mental picture. I'm okay with not seeing a guy pee, though. It just fills me with envy at their ability to quickly whip it out and go. But focusing back on Natalie and her realization that she should be with Josh, she proclaims, you know what? We're meant to be together. I'm going to stop the wedding, Donnie encourages her. And the next thing we know, it's karaoke night.
On with the karaoke.
Natalie goes to karaoke where Isabella is singing, strike up the band and let the fireflies dance, silver moon sparkling. Just kiss me. Natalie tries to get Josh drunk by buying them both 2 shots apiece, but before she has a chance to drink them, Isabella finishes and announces that Natalie is up next. Josh insists that Natalie hates karaoke, so she won't do it, but Natalie decides to put herself out there, and before she does, she downs all the shots. She starts off slowly singing. The clock strikes upon the hour and the sun begins to fade. Somebody stumbles over the cord to the machine playing the backing track. So now it's just Natalie a cappella. Still enough time to figure out how to chase my blues away. She's stinking it up, but forges on. She hits. But when the night falls, and the bartender gives her a little rhythm shaking a cocktail. Chick, chick. My loneliness calls. Somebody uses a salt shaker, giving another bit of rhythm. Chick, chick. And suddenly things are different. 3 women patrons sing in harmony. I want to dance with somebody. Natalie is in the zone suddenly. The backing track comes on in time for her to confidently sing. With somebody who loves me. Now, she's confidently singing, doing little riffs, dancing. She goes on to the bar, singing but accidentally falls off. And when she turns around, Josh is there to help her up. Suddenly, Isabella is aggressively singing towards Natalie, and the song turns into a full-on dance number where Natalie is courting Josh, and Isabella is trying to get Natalie to back off. Natalie finishes the song, and everyone except Isabella excitedly claps.
After the karaoke kersplosion, Natalie and Josh take a walk on a beautiful starlit beach. She tells him how insane it is that he's marrying somebody he hardly knows. He argues that they met under intense circumstances, which speeds things along. She reminds him that after the wedding and the dopamine wears off, there's the rest of your life to deal with. But he's unfazed and says, "I will figure it out." She stops, faces him, and asks, "Wouldn't you rather figure it out with someone you really know?" He nods a little sadly and says, "That's probably why they say it's ideal to marry your best friend." Aww. She gets a glimmer in her eye. He leans in towards her and plants an innocent kiss on her cheek and says, "Well, better be going. Big day tomorrow." And she sadly watches him walk away. The next day, Natalie wakes up to see Blake on the phone. Her plans are close by and she realizes that he's pitching her architect idea as his own.
Oof.
Once he hangs up, she calls him on it, and he readily admits, yeah, he was, but she wasn't going to be able to pitch the idea now anyways. She gets up pissed, why not? And he responds, because no woman of mine is going to be slumming it in the working world. And I was also thinking we should maybe talk about changing your name.
Ah,
she's livid. What, do you think I'm just going to marry you? Yeah, Blake says, your last name, of course, but I was also thinking about your first name. Natalie won't really work in my circle of friends, so I was thinking of Georgina. She looks at him with fire in her eyes and says, "You are totally," he interrupts her, "beguiling?" "No," she corrects him, "horrible." He tells her that she looks tired and maybe she should go back to bed, fucker. And she yells, "Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal!"
That was something that she did not mention in her rom-com tirade, which she really should have.
Yes, totally missing, had to add it in just to complete the whole circle. Mm-hmm. And she also tells him that maybe he should piss off. He gives her a look and asks, "Do you know what they say about somebody who goes mad with ambition?" She quietly says no, and he swings his jacket over his shoulder and says, eh, well, now you never will, and exit fucking stage left.
Oof.
She yells after him, I can totally Google that! True, there is a short packing montage, but before she can leave, Donnie passes by her hotel window, sees what's going on, and marches in demanding, what are you doing? She tells him she's leaving, and he's appalled because the wedding's in 20 minutes. She could give two fucks. She's over it. She couldn't even make Josh like her in this stupid perfect world. Donnie sits down opposite of her on the bed and gets real. You know, when I was younger, I was so afraid to put myself out there for love that I became this quirky little queen that just followed all my handsome gay friends around like I was a pilot fish. I tried to make myself indispensable so they always would want me around. I'd comfort them when their heart was broken, but you know what? Nobody really knew is that my heart was also constantly broken.
Aww.
But how could they know? Because I never showed them. It wasn't until I went to a palm reader in Ibiza who told me there's no being on the planet more worthy of love than yourself.
Aww.
And that's why I'm such a happy little whore today, because I love my bitchy ass. He asks her who she loves, and she quietly says Josh, and she never had the chance to tell him, and she needs to tell him. Ugh! She smacks herself on the head. I knew it was going to come down to running to stop the wedding. She jumps up, and so does Donnie. He encourages her. If you're going to run, then run, honey, like a sexy 18-year-old in a coming-out film that just realized he had a crush on his theater partner, Ryan. And she does.
Natalie runs to stop the wedding per rom-com rules. She starts running in slow motion, and she says, slow motion, so dumb, as she runs. But she forges on. Because she's generously endowed as she runs, she clutches her breasts so they won't bob around so much. She's determined to get that guy. Finally, she gets to the church and bursts into the service, and unlike Kate Beckinsale in Serendipity, she actually interrupts Josh and Isabella's wedding. She gasps for rest. Stop the wedding. Just a second. Josh is confused and Isabella is not having it. Oh no, he's mine, honey. We were meant to be together. The guests all over that, but Natalie will not be deterred. Pick me, Josh. She wears short skirts, I wear t-shirts, she's cheer captain and I'm in the bleachers. If you could see that I'm the one who understands you, been here all along, so why can't you see? You belong with me, you belong with me, Josh.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Josh, I love... Natalie pauses for a moment and reflects on the experiences she's had since being in romance land. I love me. She realizes that she didn't need to get someone else to fall in love with her. She needed to fall in love with herself. And with that realization, she tells them, carry on, and runs back outside. Suddenly, Vanessa Carlton's Thousand Miles starts playing.
Again.
Making my way downtown, walking fast, faces past, and I'm homebound.
Bing, 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 bing.
She takes their just married car and drives off and narrates, I realized all along that loving myself suddenly, the car crashes and she bangs her head and... Natalie wakes up back in the hospital. A super hot doctor comes in, and she questions his authenticity when an older, way less handsome doctor comes in and shoos off the other doctor, apologizing. They're shooting Law and Order SVU here today, he mumbles to himself. Should have been an actor. Instead, I'm buried in lawsuits. He looks up and explains, you're mugged in the subway and in a medically induced coma for 18 hours. She looks up at him. Am I okay now? Can I leave? He looks at her. If something happens to you after you leave, will you sue me? Natalie assures him no. The doctor says, yes then, you can totally leave. She tears out her IV and blood spurts all over the place. This is definitely real life.
I gotta stand that part. That's so gross. Outside the hospital, she hails a cab while the song "Break Out, Boom Boom Boom, Boom Boom Boom, Don't Start to Ask." I don't know the rest of that song. Plays in the background. The cab takes her to her shitty neighborhood full of normal-looking people. She goes into her apartment, and it's her same shitty apartment with her dog that won't listen to her. She points at him with finger guns and says, "Bang!" And he looks at her without rolling over. But he does poop. Close enough. She puts on a shirt, grabs her plans, and heads out to work. She still has her big presentation. When she's in the hall, she sees Donnie picking up a package outside of his door, and she's ecstatic. "Donnie, you're still here!" He looks at her confused while Bowen motherfucking Yang comes out, kisses him on the lips, and tells him, "Hurry up, honey, the frittatas are ready." This can't be. Natalie's confused. "How are you still gay? Are you stuck?" Donnie's offended. "I've been gay forever," he argues. "But," she asks, "all the notes on your door." He rolls his eyes. "I sell weed, honey. We're a couple of blocks from an all-girls school. They just want drugs." Bowen and Donnie give her a verbal lashing on her view of the stereotypical gay, but she doesn't give a shit. She goes over and hugs him and whispers, "Thank you," in his ear, much to his dismay. Back in the office, it's a new day and a new Natalie. When she gets outside the elevator, lazy desk guy hands her a pile of trash and asks, "Hey, can you throw this away?" She says, "No, actually, I have things to do," and flips it out of his hand and onto the floor and yells, "Boom!" as she walks away. Then she's met by the office manager, who whines, "The office 3D printer is broken again. Can you call the..." Natalie responds promptly, "You? Can I call you? Because you're the office manager and that's your job." She starts to protest, but Natalie shuts her up by turning her hand into a phone and pretends calling, saying, "Hello, office manager, can you do your fucking job?" Then Natalie gets to her desk. Whitney sees her and hugs her like she hasn't seen her in a week, admitting, "I missed you an unhealthy amount." Natalie makes her swear that they will never, ever fight again. And Whitney's confused. "We never fight. I love you, mostly because you let me watch full-length movies during work." "Yeah," Natalie replies, "we gotta stop doing that." She gives her a tough but fair compromise. "No movies and I won't get mad at you." And then beelines into the conference room with her plans in hand. And she is ready to present.
Yes.
Mr. Lewis, a.k.a. Blake in rom-com world, sees her and starts placing a coffee order because that's what she does, right? But she apologizes. "Oh, no, I don't do that." He wonders aloud what she does do, and she asks him to sit down and she'll show him. She then gives an empathetic, beautifully worded pitch for the garage. She tells the people in the conference room that most people don't think of garages. They're dark, they're closed off. Nobody really notices them. Is she talking about her project or herself? But what if we opened them up? What if we actually made something of them? Made them light and airy with glass walls everywhere, and suddenly something that was invisible that nobody ever noticed would become beautiful and really special. The client loves the idea and she's thrilled. So much so that she immediately leaves the meeting to go to work on the project, quote-unquote. But instead of going back to her desk, she beelines it to Josh, who is playing air drums with earbuds on. She starts giving him a verbal lashing about living his life, but he can't hear her. Once he pops the buds out, she repeats that he needs to stop living in a fantasy land, stop staring at the supermodel out of the window, and stop fantasizing about being with her because she's not going to make him happy.
Yeah.
All the while, Josh is snickering behind his hand and asks, once she stopped yelling, if she's done. She is, so he makes her sit in his office chair. He goes over to where she sits across the office at her desk and says, "Look." When he sits down, the light reflects his face onto the window that he's always looking out of, and she begins to realize, a little teary-eyed, that this whole time he was staring at her, not the model outside.
Aww.
He comes over and quietly admits that it was you. I was always looking at you. She shakes her head, calls him an idiot quietly, and then they kiss. And it's another good one.
Aww.
Okay, she says awkwardly. Maybe we should go out sometime. He agrees loudly, and their awkward exchange gets louder. Josh asks, why are we talking like we're mad at each other? And she doesn't know. But they make plans to go out that weekend, and she leaves because why not? She waits at the elevator banks, ready to make a dramatic, hasty exit, but the doors take a few seconds longer to open, and she stands there rather awkwardly, waiting for them too. But when they do, she rides down the elevator, beaming from ear to ear, only to be stopped, ding, on the third floor. It's Whitney, who has ran down a flight of stairs, and asks where she's going. Natalie tells her that she's just going for coffee because now she's her own coffee bitch. Whitney gushes that she's so proud of her. And Natalie informs her that Josh doesn't complete her because she completes herself. Yeah. And Whitney agrees but points out that her life is pretty much a rom-com now. She has the dream job, the guy that really likes her, and the cool best friend. So congratulations, you're in one of those movies that you hate so much.
Aww.
The door closes as Whitney gracefully leans out and Natalie rolls her eyes and says, yeah, the only thing I need now is some catchy music. The elevator dings at the bottom floor and Madonna's, do you believe in love? Because I got something to sing about it. And it goes something like this. Don't go for second best, baby. Put your love to the test.
You know you got to.
Natalie sings along and there is an epic song and dance number at the end of the movie, including all the cast of characters that were in the movie. And it's glorious. Complete with a full-on dance number, Blake playing the saxophone, and a dance freestyle reel at the end.
Aww.
The end.
The end. Woo!
Fuck. The end at the dance reel at the end and the thing that they did at the end with the dance. It was great.
Doing this movie was so much more satisfying than Set It Up. I'm going to put that out there.
Set It Up was like a D minus compared to this one.
Oh, no kidding. And writing this out was like a dream, whereas writing out Set It Up just took forever.
All right, Corinne. So what do you give Isn't It Romantic?
One dry kiss. No, I'm just kidding.
What? And that is the conclusion of this podcast forever and always, because we obviously are not compatible if she thinks this movie only gets one dry kiss.
No. I give this movie a strong, solid 4 dry kisses. It had musical numbers, love. It had size diversity, awesome. It was funny. It had hotness. It had Priyanka Chopra Jonas. Yes, that's all I have to say to her. Yes. And yeah, it just had so many like sweet, special moments in it. I loved seeing Whitney go from super regular person looking to like gorgeous, scary bitch. It was amazing. And she is in the TV show Glow. She's one of the lead wrestlers in Glow. Yes. And she's fantastic.
That's so funny that you say that, because I was watching that with my guy friend and he's like, where does she look familiar from? He's like, I know, where do I, and I like pulled up IMDb for him and he's like, Glow, I know her from Glow.
Yeah, I love Glow.
And she was amazing in it.
Yeah, it had so many people that I loved in it, and I thought the themes were good and everything. So, super enjoyed it. 4 dry kisses. And what do you think of Isn't It Romantic?
I'm going to give it 4.5 dry kisses because
I considered that.
I tend to like a movie that makes fun of itself or makes fun of tropes. Mm-hmm. Like, I really enjoyed a Christmas movie, Christmas.
Yeah.
It's more so than like the other Hallmark movies because it like pokes fun at itself. And yeah. I really like a movie that pokes fun at itself or the genre that it's in, because romantic comedies, although they are delightful and I enjoy them very much, they seriously have some of those tropes that are just like running in slow motion and all that other stuff that they... So yeah, just a movie that makes fun of it and list out all those tropes, and hearing her say the tropes and then having to relive the tropes in her rom-com nightmare world was really fun.
Yeah.
I love fucking Adam Devine. He's like one of my favorite comedic actors. He's so funny, just like naturally. I love Rebel Wilson. Love Liam Hemsworth. So I thought it was cast really well. I love Priyanka. Great diversity. Great storyline. I laughed out loud quite a few times when I first watched this. This wasn't the first time I saw it, but I remember when I did first watch it, I laughed out loud. And I'm like, if a movie makes me laugh, I just love it that much more. And so, yes, I give it 4.5 dry kisses.
Woo! And
I also love the little Easter eggs that it had throughout.
Yeah, for real. It had so many different references that our Isn't It Romantic ambassador Tamara picked up on, which super appreciate.
And it's sad because I'm like, I know all those movies, all of them, all the movies they're talking about and all the references they're making. I get it. I totally get it. I am the ambassador after all.
Yes, you are. So, Miss Tamara, what do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we are still full on in New York, and we are doing 2 weeks' notice with the lovely Sandra Bullock.
Woot woot. Love Sandy. Yay. I'm so excited. I haven't seen this since it was out in the theaters, and I remember barely a thing about it, so I can't wait. Hugh Grant, Sandra Bullock, boundaries. Excited.
That is one of my favorites and one that I've had in various forms in DVD, VHS probably, and Blu-ray, and I watch it every time I see it on TV.
If you have anything you'd like to say about 2 weeks' notice, isn't it romantic, or about Liam Hemsworth and how what a dish he is, or Priyanka Chopra, thank you very much. Email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us on the social meds, Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And as always, if you could find the time, we'd love to see your ratings and reviews anywhere you might listen to this podcast. But now we'd just like to thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! We'll see you next time.
See you next time. Short skirts, he likes t-shirts, he's dear captain.
Sing it! Bring it home, Corinne! Bring it home!
No, if I was going to bring it home, it'd be Lady in Red is dancing with me, cheek to cheek.
Making my way downtown, watching.
Yes! We're going
to have like a sing-off where we battle each other.
I want to dance bad with rom-com somebody.
No! No!
Oh my god, that's totally the outtake. Oh god.